Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Tuesday, 25 January. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, we're chatting with Pethley Radenhuis. The markets, the US was down 3% yesterday, closed green. Daniel King from Counterpoint, value in local bonds, but vigilance required. And Linda Trim from Giant Leap, how does corporates, businesses get staff back to the office? It's one thing to, I suppose, issue a proclamation, but how do they make it viable and how do they make staff actually want to be in the office? The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Steinhoff, it's just about settled then. So the deals happened. They got some $25 billion to pay out claimants. It equates to about $5.85 per share. Not bad. But of course, that stock was $90 at one point and collapsed to, what, a rand or so. So it is a small percentages of the loss. Business Day, Sibanye commits to green future despite a collapse of Brazilian deals. They were going to buy the copper plant and the like in Brazil. That has been cancelled. It saves them $1 billion. But I suspect they will spend that somewhere else. Morning markets, as mentioned, S&P and NASDAQ closed green after being 3% down. S&P up a third, NASDAQ up 0.5%. Asia's red, Sydney off 2.6, Tokyo down 2%. Commodities mixed, gold 1,844, Brent 86.67, platinum still above 1,000 at 1,018, palladium at 21.42, and rhodium at 16,690. Rand 15.30. Top 40, 260 points to the upside, which is about a third of a percent, and that as Tencent trades down 0.9% in Hong Kong.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Pethley Radenhuis, founder of Herenia Capital Advisors. Pietri, appreciate the early morning time. Sorry, my brain is soft this morning. That was quite a Monday, and we've seen it the other way, where markets have been green and then they sold down late in the session. Was that a turnaround? I mean, in your update last night, you said you had been ever so carefully nibbling. Those nibbles are a couple of percentage points in the green already.
Yeah, so good evening. Good evening. You see, my brain is a bit numb too, actually. I think it's a sign of the times, to tell you the truth. I mean, yesterday saw a 2,500-point down day on our market, which is around 3.7%. And then last night, the S&P 500 traded around 3.5% down as well, only to end positive by 0.4%. So it was a wild, wild evening. And I think even though we had the turnaround, what's interesting to note is that it did still manage to close below the 200-day moving average for the first time in 18 months. So this is the first time essentially since the COVID crash, which was March 2020, the market had then regained that 200-day moving average and had not looked back since. It has been sort of just trending up ever since. And for the first time since then, we've actually tested and sort of cracked that 200-day moving average. So it's interesting times. I mean, I think that, as I mentioned in the update last night, I think that, we may have a good case to start building a small long position from here. It looks a little bit as if the volatility term structure is providing a buy signal. We've seen volatility sort of turn around the 35s, 36s, and push lower from there a couple of times in a row now. So we probably have something similar. What's interesting is that volatility, if you look at the VIX, for example, that only reacted yesterday by pushing really hard. Where if you look at what happened in the first week of December, VIX was arguably at the same level for a much shorter pullback. So I think what's happening here is that in the December sort of correction was more based on optionality, people buying options, taking positions to hedge themselves and that type of thing, as where over the last, Thursday, Friday, Monday, this was just pure selling, right? This is real proper selling. So the question is really, is this a short-term sort of tantrum that the market is throwing, or is this actually potentially the beginning of a bit of a trend change? Do we see a repeat of March next year? Those are difficult things to answer. However, I do think that we probably see a Fed. We have the Fed speaking on Wednesday evening, our time. I think we probably see a more dovish than expected Fed. And potentially, you know, that could lead to a rally. Although, let me just add the disclaimer. I could be wrong.
Well, and that's the point. And you make a key point. Small positions, and of course, traders always have stop losses. A quick point on gold. Looking like it should be doing what gold should do, right? We're seeing some inflation. Gold is supposed to respond to that. It is looking like we could be getting a bit of a break higher from gold.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is something that we've been watching for some time. There's a big sort of ascending triangle on the gold price, right? And that's been forming over the last almost 2 years now. So that's quite a big formation. And if that does break, it does aim gold price significantly higher. But we, again, you know, we have to wait for confirmation. It's given, this particular formation has given me one false signal in the past, which I thought was it. It was, you know, just a false signal. So, you know, I had to readjust some trend lines and relook at the bigger picture. But the setup is still there and still valid. So I guess we need to be a little bit patient. You know, gold obviously is that asset that people run to when there is a little bit of uncertainty. What's interesting to see is that even though we've had quite the sell-off in the last couple of days, gold has not responded with a similar sized move, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So potentially that could be a signal that there might not be as much fear in the market as what, you know, equities might be signaling to us.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll have to see. I think, but you know, again, potentially the market is waiting for Wednesday to see what's going to happen with inflation.
Yeah, from Jerome Powell. And I take your point in the meantime. Although gold was flat yesterday, and a flat day yesterday was a solid, that was a winning day. Petri Redenhuis, Herenia Capital Advisors, appreciate the early morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Daniel King, head of fixed income at Counterpoint. Daniel, appreciate the early morning time. You put out a note last week around our bonds, and you make the point, which South African bonds are, and we get to the vigilance part in a moment, but truthfully, our bonds are cheap, particularly relative to their peers, offering opportunity here.
Yeah. Thanks, Simon. Thanks for having me. I think the fixed income space globally is actually quite a tricky space right now, because there are risks everywhere, you know, with inflation and rates moving all over the show. But in terms of preference order, we do generally prefer emerging market bonds to developed market bonds right now, you know, because we have this legacy in the developed market universe of massive central bank involvement in government bonds, which, I mean, while we don't necessarily know the exact extent of the impact of that on yields, it does raise a question mark there about how appropriately those bonds are being priced. You know, in emerging markets, we don't have that problem. And so we believe that the market is at least free to appropriately price the risks, although the risks are of a different nature. They're free to price those risks that exist and compensate us for that. So South Africa sits within that space, and so in particular, our government bonds actually screen as one of the cheaper outliers in the valuation spectrum, you know, providing yields of up to 10.6 right now, you know, which if you use historical inflation rates, that might be a real yield of up to 5%. Plausibly, if the inflation target is lowered or, you know, to the peer group level over the next decade, it could be as much as 6-7% real at some point in the future. So that is just unparalleled in the developed market space, where real yields are actually, you know, for the most part, still negative. So, yeah, we are generally quite overweight South African bonds. But we're also, you know, quite sensitive to the risks involved, you know, as we highlighted in the note which we published, it's why we're still being careful to diversify those exposures to a reasonable degree. And, you know, the situation can change, and if it changes, we'll be obliged to change our view. But for now, we are overweight. Yeah,
and I take that point. I mean, it's fluid, and things can change in a hurry. But you also made the point, I mean, obviously, I mean, attractive, not without risk. There's always going to be some risk, particularly when we're cheap. And I mean, Turkey, an example. I suppose the point is that we're not Turkey. I mean, South Africa, you can lay many blames at our door. Being Turkey and is not one of them. We've, if nothing else, a very independent central bank.
Yeah, exactly. I think so. So that's very important when we're thinking about the fundamental pillars of a smoothly functioning government bond market.
Mm-hmm.
The first is monetary integrity. And second is fiscal integrity.
Mm-hmm.
So we think that South Africa actually scores really quite well on monetary integrity. You know, arguably we have more central bank independence than even the Fed or the ECB, which have arguably become quite politicized in a way. And our central bank's, you know, basic mandate, which is to maintain basically the monetary integrity of the country, is actually encoded in the constitution, you know, which requires a 2/3 majority in parliament to change. So I think we really do have that going for us. But I think that the more, perhaps more important than more imminent risk in our case, at least, is the fiscal side.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are scenarios in which GDP growth does continue to be low and tax buoyancy declines and expenditure discipline is undermined. And those are not necessarily pretty scenarios for us. A lack of growth, I think, in particular, you know, could usher in some unhealthy macro policy making over time. And those are the kinds of structural changes which create the negative feedback loops like the one you're seeing in Turkey right now. So that is something to be cognizant of. But having said that, you know, under our current baseline scenarios, and this is true for Treasury and true for the IMF as well, you know, the government debt to GDP ratio is anticipated to stabilize in the next 5 years. And obviously the market is wise to these risks. And our point is actually that it's well priced. So we're actually more comfortable taking a well priced risk in an emerging market context than one in the DM space, which we are not necessarily being compensated for.
Yeah, and I take that point. I mean, the actions of the central bankers in the developed markets are distorting that price. But also, as you're saying that, a thought occurs to me, they're almost becoming beholden to markets rather than sort of good old-fashioned economic policy. And I think of that taper tantrum from 2014. And we'll see what happens this week with the sell-off that we've seen. Daniel King, head of fixed income at Counterpoint, appreciate the early morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com. or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Linda Trim, director at Giant Leap, talking about going back to the office. Linda, appreciate the early morning time. One of the things we're starting to see, and I certainly, it kind of stops and starts where corporates are calling staff back to the office, and then in some cases saying no. I know, you know, Apple keeps on famously saying you're back and then not. But Linda, to make the point, I mean, if corporates are looking for staff to come back to the office, there needs to be a new environment when they get to work. If it's just the sort of January 2020 office, staff are going to be like, but hang on a second, corporates need to adapt.
You're completely right. The office of the past certainly didn't work, and working from home hasn't worked either. So we've got to completely rethink what people are actually going to come and do at the office. It's no point in sitting in a Zoom call for 8 hours. We're back to where we were.
And you make the point in the article that you had out. I mean, Salesforce, which is one you use. I mean, we're talking around, okay, so what's the benefit of that physical space office? And it's around collaboration. So what they're doing is tripling the size of some of the areas, moving out desks, adding couches, TVs, whiteboards. If the office of the future is there because of the serendipity of the water cooler talk and the like, it needs to be geared for that and designed for that.
You're completely right, but we also have to be careful because we're not likely to collaborate 8 hours a day. So we've also got to give people places to do focus work when they're in the office those days. You also need to prepare for meetings and some collaborative conversations that happen. They're not all serendipitous. So we do need to give people that room, and not everybody can do focus work at home. And that's where the office has become very flexible.
Is this almost becoming, I mean, I remember, you know, 10, 15 years ago, the Facebooks, the Googleplexes, where there was all the, you know, you could get your laundry done, there was lunch, there was, you know, all of those exciting things which the rest of the world looked at envy. And they had the cubicles and spaces for focus, they had the collaboration. My sense is almost that the world is kind of moving, probably not as far as the Googles and the Facebooks, but getting to that point where you wake up in the morning and you're actually looking forward to the office, not just because you enjoy your job, but because it's an environment which is invigorating.
You're completely right with that. I mean, people have got stuck in a rut at home. They're nervous to come back to the office. People are scared to get back into a routine. But I think there are the basic things that the office offers, which is stuff like ergonomics, mobility. Mm-hmm. At home, we sit stuck in one place. You're never going to have the same technologies at home, and the people factor. There's no price that we can put on social capital, and that's what people have to start remembering and getting used to again.
Are we seeing corporates in your line of work? I mean, are corporates taking this seriously? Are they having a hard look, or are they perhaps more just kind of paying some lip service but not really doing anything? I mean, is your phone ringing off the hook?
Non-stop from 5 in the morning till 8 at night. We're desperate to get back to work. Although we were pro working from home, mm-hmm. we've realized that people are overworking. They're producing the wrong kind of work. They're absolutely burnt out. You cannot run from call to call, email to email. We've absolutely got to find a way to get our people back. And funnily enough, those that have brought people back and are doing this hybrid office are phoning to say we actually don't have enough space anymore because more and more people want to come back.
And because the old office, and I've worked in some corporates where it's open plan, but there's literally rows and rows and rows and rows of people, and then one or two pause areas in a conference room at the end. The point is, we might actually have maybe less people in the office at any one given point in time, but those people are going to require more space to make it properly work.
They're going to require a bit more space, and they're going to require a multitude of different types of spaces to work from because your jobs are different all the time. So you might need booths to collaborate, mm-hmm, focus rooms mm-hmm. to do a Zoom call, a desk to work at, a meeting room, town halls when you want to bring the whole company in on one day. The office has got to be a little bit like a hotel.
Yeah, and actually make it, as I said a moment ago, make the office experience fun, because the collaboration, the colleagues, I always enjoyed that, but the office in of itself was always just a kind of drab experience, which truthfully felt like it was coming straight out of the 1940s, and it probably was. Linda Trim, director at Giant Leap, appreciate your time this morning. And that's our question we're asking on our LinkedIn and Twitters. The corporates are calling people back to the office. Is your company changing things at the office to make it more attractive for you? You can have your vote, you can have your say on our LinkedIn and Twitter profiles. That's it for today. We're chatting with Bruce Williamson yesterday from Integral Asset Management, talking PGMs. The metals had a really good start to the year, and as he pointed out, the entire basket of the 6E PGMs was only a little lower in the second half of last year, calendar year, than it had been in the first half. And of course, then yesterday, our PGM miners got absolutely sold on the market, as the metal pretty much remained flat. So the question we'd asked you was, are you buying into the rally? Almost 40% of you said yes, you were. Just over a quarter of you said you had never sold. I was one of those. I had held on. I've seen some weakness, but I was holding. A third of you were concerned and said, no, you think it'll fade in time. Have your vote, have your say, Twitter and LinkedIn. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial service provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nicole, Nabuchle, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.